You're listening to the Viral Molly Podcast. Now here's your host, Rob, on the mic.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Viral Volley Podcast. With me got Jay Hossick of George Mason, Dave Hunt of Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, and Al Knipe of Long Beach State. Thanks for coming in again to the show this morning, guys, and especially after such a big weekend of volleyball. So looking forward to catching up with all of you and going into the good stuff that's happened this last week. But before we get going on, always got to hit the COVID scorecard. COVID, again, reared its ugly head, and one of the coaches on here was affected with one of his matches in the MPSF. That's Dave Hunt against UCLA last Wednesday. And another team that was affected was University of Charleston. Their two matches against Sacred Heart. I wanted to ask you guys in there with the conferences affected, how does this affect the upcoming tournaments and seeding and all that? And so that'd be Dave and Jay. So Dave, you go first.
Yeah. So you can see I'm filming from home because we're in quarantine. So that makes it a little bit nicer, I guess. So for us, we built in a bye week at the end of conference play. If you didn't have matches to make up, you use that bye week to get healthy, to stay healthy. And then if you had matches to make up, then you try to do them in those weeks. So we actually moved our Stanford matches that are supposed to be played this weekend to that bye week. And there's a lot of implications. If Stanford beats us, you know, they're playing in the sixth seed, depending on what happens at UCLA this weekend. That could determine the 1-2 seed, lock us into the three. So there's still a lot to be determined heading in these last few weeks. So, and then I think the other match that you're going to see made up is the Concordia GCU match is also being played in that bye week as well.
Yep. How are you, Jay? How about what's happening with the UC and EIVA?
Yeah, you know, the bummer for us is we didn't have really any time to schedule at the end of the year to make any matches up. So unless some team wanted to go midweek, it's kind of tough to make up. The challenge is that Charleston really could have used those matches. If they would have pulled out two wins, they would have hosted in the first round. And right now it looks like St. Francis is going to host now instead. That's a big advantage, obviously. But with those two teams, when they went to the other team's house, they won. So actually it could work in Charleston's favor, knowing that they could beat St. Francis in their gym. So I think that's the only real thing that's going to affect those two teams. I think everybody else is going to pretty much stay the way they are.
Yep. Good stuff. We're going to jump to the Conference Carolinas tournament. They actually have one more night of play tonight. They've got four matches going on tonight. It's Tuesday currently as we're recording. Still a few things to be determined there. I mean, it's looking like Mount Olive will win out there and get the number one seed, but the rest of the way after tonight could change a little bit. So I'm going to go over to Dan and the MIVA because they finished and actually have their tournament seeding. So you talk about what's happened this last week and then what we should expect this upcoming weekend.
Yeah. So the five gamers really put some moving pieces in play, and we were fortunate enough to win on the first night against Loyola, so that clinched first for us. And then going into our second night with Loyola had ramifications. If they would have beat us, they would have locked in second. We were fortunate enough to win 1-5 in terms of that. But then you had this snowball effect. Ball State beats McKendree in five. Quincy beats Ohio State. The Quincy's like, hey, we're going to jump up to the seventh seed. Nope, Lindenwood beat Purdue Fort Wayne in five. And so it keeps Quincy at the eighth seed and Lindenwood stays at seven. And I think Purdue Fort Wayne was the only one that stayed where they were seated at, which was six. And so Loyola gets back up to second because of the Ball State McKendree win. So, and then McKendree's third. And then Ohio State, I mean, that was a tough, that hurt them. Like they were going to be hosting the first round in their place, hosting the national championship. They lose that match in five and then go down to five and now have to go play Coach Walton in his last run here for coaching at his place, the tournament, which I think certainly is going to be a tough environment for those guys. It's a little bit of a snapshot of what's going on. All those games are going to go on Saturday for the first round and then semifinals for the winners are the following Saturday at the highest seeds. And then the finals will be the highest seed remaining the week after that. So it's a 3 weeks. We got tested yesterday. That's kind of the nervous part. So they're doing a twice a week testing now for us. We got tested yesterday after Easter, but I didn't let any.
Just for clarification, you're referring to COVID testing.
COVID testing. Yeah. Referring to COVID testing. Sorry. They tested everybody yesterday and we were good. So we test again Thursday. So.
Yep. All right. Let's jump over to Dave over in the MPSF. And you still have 2 weeks of play, conference play remaining. What could shake down being that there's some makeups and a little shifting around there?
Yeah. So UCLA goes to GCU, gets two big wins. They bounce back. They were down 0-2 the first night, winning five. So I think that pretty much, it might've been already sort of locked in, but us, GCU and BYU are the top three teams. It looks like USC and Grand Canyon are pretty much going to match up against each other, but we'll see. Then Concordia goes up and Stanford to Stanford, and Stanford beats them twice. So yeah, there's still a lot to be determined. Concordia has to play four more matches, which could drastically change. I believe four more matches, which could drastically change their seeding in terms of who they're going to match up against. So lots of things are still up in the air.
Well, from what we were discussing last week, you said you're going number of wins for MPSF, which is a little different yes. from the past.
Yeah. So number of wins, and then that'll break down into if there's a team that's tied with wins, then it'll go win percentage to determine seeding. And that's all it is just determining the seeding for the playoffs.
Let's go to Jay and the EIVA. I mean, obviously with a big win over Penn State, NJIT still playing really well. What's going to be happening in that conference? Because I believe you have one more this week, two more, or a series this week.
Yeah, this is the last week in a EIVA play. Really, if things kind of pan out the way that they're going, Penn State will host the EIVAs. There'll be a first round quarterfinal that unfortunately for some teams, they'll have to make a trade. There's somebody at my door in case you hear what's going on in the background. But what's happening this week for us is we're going to NJIT, and we lost NJIT both times earlier in the year. And we just beat Penn State. So they're the number one team. If we can take one away from NJIT, the reality is we now know we can beat everybody in the conference. And that's good for us going into the whole thing. But it looks like right now that Penn State and NJIT will have byes in the first round. We'll play Sacred Heart in the first round, and Charleston will play St. Francis. And that'll happen the following week when everything starts rolling.
All right. And then finally, Al over in the Big West. I know that Irvine has a bye week along with Santa Barbara because they start a little earlier. Some teams have two more series to finish up for the year, but go ahead and jump in there.
Yeah, they're obviously off. They're ahead on games played already. And then Hawaii's going to be at Northridge for two, and we're going to go home and away with San Diego. And, you know, not all the games are – not everyone's played the same amount right now, but us and Santa Barbara and San Diego all have the same loss record. So there's still a lot, obviously, played out for that. You know, it's no mystery where our playoffs are going because they're not – we're not doing it where it's based off of the number one seed. You know, that was determined during all the COVID stuff and that's going to Hawaii. And then, so it's just kind of a C thing. They're obviously after us not being able to pull off the five gamer, we don't get to add any surprises to that thing. There's no way they can be caught at this point. They'll be the number one seed. And right now with Santa Barbara sitting in second, I think because of tiebreak reasons, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't looked through that because it's just when you have four games still to play, you're not really looking too much at the tiebreak scenarios. But I'm pretty sure it sits with them at second right now. And we got a lot to play out. And then then we play again next weekend against Northridge, and everybody else plays again. We wrap it up. We don't have that week in between because we got started so late, especially us, the Northridge. So we're I think Jeff and I are in the same boat. We're playing as many matches as we can right now and trying to make sure that we don't get sucked into where we miss anything late. We're just hoping we can, you know, let's finish up the league and let's have everybody finish up their leagues healthy and get to their tournaments. Cause you know, that could be tragic for any of the programs, especially if it happened at a tournament or, you know, it just at the end of the year, you don't want to see these kids all across the country, everything they've already dealt with, having something happen that takes them out of playing in the postseason. That would be terrible.
Yeah. You know, recently out was the latest RPI, and last week we had this discussion about the selection criteria, and there's some shifting around. I believe Dan Lewis moved up into the number two spot in front of BYU, but you know, I think from we gathered from last week's discussion, the eyeball test would be heavily weighted this year. But what are your guys' thoughts on the RPI again, just so, you know, we can, with the what seems to be a little more accurate this week, because there's some like real odd things that happened from the first one. What are your guys' thoughts on what's come out this week? And we'll start with you, Al.
Well, I just think that, you know, historically in men's volleyball, there were RPIs never really played into it, right? Over the years for the at-large. And then it's been a big part of what we've done for now a chunk of years. I think it's just going to feel a lot more like it did historically with the committee when they get together. There's just no way to compare when you have teams that haven't played out of conference and teams that had, you know, like, for example, you know, teams within our conference that did no decision of their own, couldn't start. And then you have teams that were able to get started and they played each other four times. And how do you weigh what's more important? And do you take things away from, you know, a kid who, or a program who had no choice, they couldn't start? And then do you reward a team that was able to play a lot? I mean, it's going to be a very difficult thing for the guys in that room. I think that's an easy thing to say. But I think the best thing you said so far is it's definitely going to be an eyeball test. Their goal, as much as you want to be equitable with everything, there's just no way to do that for anything that's happening this year. I'm sure everyone's finding that in their own gym, even with their own way they're dealing with their own players. Nothing's been equitable. You know, it's not equitable on our campus with, I mean, even gym time or how you can get tested, or like everything this year has been thrown out the window of just making it equitable. So since that's probably not achievable, that's a very difficult thing for that committee. And they're going to have to come up with their number one job is to make sure that they try to produce a field for the final seven that is the best representation for our men's volleyball. And that's a tough task this year, because there's a lot of different combinations that make up a very, very good tournament.
Yep. Anyone else want to chip in on the RPI? It was just out.
Listen, the RPI, Alan nailed it. We've talked about it the last few weeks. Without cross-pollination, it's real tough to see what anybody else can stack up against. I mean, you look at the RPI top 20, Damon and DeUville are 10 and 11. and I no slam against those programs. Coaches are good coaches and teams are doing well, but I'm not so sure that they are deserving of a 10 and 11 spot, maybe on the eyeball test. But hey, it is what it is, and we're all kind of moving forward, and you know, hopefully we all stay healthy and we can all get to our tournament and play and let the chips fall where they may.
Anyone else want to say anything else about the RPI?
I just know that I'm hiring Dave. That's all I care about right now.
Well, it brings us to our next topic, the latest AVCA poll, because you're also have kind of moved in front of Dave, at least from the listing alphabetically, because the shift was Lewis and Pepperdine now tied for fourth in the AVCA poll. But now Al, Long Beach moves tie for sixth with UCLA. So a little shifting, but how we all established last week, the poll is not used as selection criteria. But is this an accurate reflection of what's happening in men's D1-2 volleyball today? And we'll start with, let's go with Al on this one.
Yeah, I think it's, once again, it's a little bit like the RPI to me. You know, I guess that coaches are watching the other conferences through volumetrics, but we're not playing each other. And I have a way better feeling of, you know, how Dave's team is or how Dan or Jay's team is when, one, I'm prepping to play them, and two, I'm actually in the arena with their team and really get a vibe of how they're competing and who their guys are and how they're responding after sets. So to me, I'm about as concerned on the coaches poll as I am with the RPI right now. It's just it just doesn't hold a lot of value to me. Not that it's not important, because I think a coaches poll is really important for and the media polls are really important for the promotions of our sport and to kind of give the general public an idea of the kind of a general idea of what's going on with the conference or the sport. But in this year, I don't know, maybe it's just the focus. I did like kind of like this tunnel vision that I'm finally in this little 6-week window. I get to coach volleyball. I haven't really strayed too far. So sorry, I don't have any really exciting answers on that.
Yep. How about you, Jay?
Yeah, no, the polls are for the most part what everybody's idea of where they think teams should sit. And most coaches are doing their homework and, you know, putting people where they feel they're deserving of being. And there's some coaches that are just kind of checking it in and, hey, I'm just going to keep putting the same teams no matter what the win-loss record is. But on the whole, I think it's all okay. And again, we, you know, the top 10 is really, there's a lot of battles going on inside there. And the next 5, 6, 7 teams, all kind of interchangeable. There's not much movement going from like a 12 to a 6. It's not happening this year. So, you know, I think just Alan nailed it with the, you know, it's a way to promote our sport. If you have a ranked team coming into your gym, that gets fans in the seats a little bit more. But with this year with COVID and people can't host anybody, does it really matter at all?
Yeah. We go Dan or Dave, you have anything else to add on there?
Yeah.
Dan, since you're higher than me, you can go.
Actually, we're tied. We're tied. That's the reason I said that. Anyway, I don't know. I think we keep saying it every week. The coaches are doing the best job they can in terms of the games that are being played. And like we just said, Jay said it again. It's just the teams that are in the top 10. How great, I told this the other day, how great would it be if we had a tournament that was a few more teams, especially this year, because there's so many good teams and you'd see those guys battle. If it was like a 16-team tournament or a 12-team tournament. And, you know, that would be pretty neat just because I think there'd be a lot of good matches that would go on from that standpoint. And back to the other thing, I still don't totally know how you even put one together this year with all that statistical information. You know what I mean? It's like, because it's all so skewed, but at least the coaches are, is a little bit of an eyeball test from watching some of these matches live. And like I said, a lot of good players, a lot of good teams that are competing well, I think, which is just nice to have this because last night or last year, a year ago, we were all doing these podcasts from our basements. And so it's way better.
Running out of toilet paper and, you know, all that stuff, right? All right, David, did you have anything else to add on there?
Yeah, I think you're seeing a clear separation between, you know, who people think the higher teams are and the lower teams are. That's about the only takeaway. Whether you want to rank them 6, you want to rank them 4, it doesn't really matter. But I think you're seeing some teams separate themselves in terms of how they play volleyball.
Yep. Well, next news item of the week, and one of our coaches was involved in a huge match this weekend, but there was a long stoppage up in the islands as Long Beach stayed at Hawaii. And as obviously one of the big discussion topics of the week, it was far too late in the morning. I say morning because it was morning on the Pacific coast. I just couldn't stay up this weekend, but you know, obviously there is a discussion courtside, match number 2 of Long Beach State of Hawaii. People are asking what happened and, you know, I didn't watch it, so I couldn't speak into the situation. And, you know, a lot of people were chattering about it and I figured to give Al a chance to explain what was happening over at the Stan Sheriff Center or Simplify Arena at Stan Sheriff Center.
Yeah. You know, to be really honest with you, I'm not sure anybody still knows the really what happened over there because, you know, after the match, there was a narrative put out about what happened, which was completely false. And I'm not saying that it was on purpose. I honestly don't think that everyone was on the same page. If you watch the matches, we played a 4-gamer on Friday night, a 5-gamer on Saturday night. We played 9 sets. And I had an issue with one serve situation that happened in the second set of the second night. At no time the entire weekend did I have any problem with the piped in artificial noise that we got told that would be allowed in our conference, which you knew we were going to get. We had it at the Pyramid. They have it at Stan Sheriff. It's no problem at all. And that's why I didn't complain about it in the first night. And by the way, we lost that match. Didn't complain about anything the first match. But the second night, it was Spencer Olivier serving in the second set. And as he tosses the ball, they blast the artificial noise, kind of like all of a sudden a game buzzer going off artificially in a gym. And if you notice, if you go back and watch the video, everyone kind of stops, looks around. And I react to that because whether or not that's legal or not legal, I don't know. I've never checked the bylaws. Can you play a buzzer or crowd noise on a serve? Usually when we play over there, there's 11,000 people anyway, so it's super loud. So you're never questioning noise when you're over there, but in an empty building that they're making artificial noise and they're playing it in the background, then to spike it real loud on a serve, just to, you know, to kind of, to go along with kind of a baseball analogy, it's kind of bush. It's bush league to do that. Maybe you can do it, maybe you can't, but I was questioning, can you do it? And is this going to continue the rest of the match? Well, when I spoke to the down ref, he said, yeah, you cannot do that. That's wrong. And he actually signaled replay. He wanted a replay from the up ref. And so I was having a discussion with the down ref about that. And then really all sorts of chaos started, which was interesting to me, because as I have every right to defend what I think is right for my team, as I think every head coach has their own right. The last thing I was kind of prepared for in that situation was another head coach to come kind of into the discussion I'm having with the down ref about my issue and bring in a whole bunch of motion telling me that I have to deal with it. It's home court advantage and it's only piped in noise. And at that point, you know, there's a motion going on, and there's no doubt I responded to him back in the same tone he brought a motion into me, which in the 20 plus years I've been a head coach, I've never had a discussion with another head coach during a match. That's just unprofessional. I mean, going back to like a baseball thing, imagine a baseball manager going out to talk to an umpire, and as he's questioning the call, the other manager runs out of the dugout, starts screaming at the other manager. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's, once again, there's probably not a rule about it, but I think the comment made by their head coach was that I was truly unprofessional about my behavior. And I would like to probably say, well, if there's probably no discussion at all, like normal between head coaches, if Charlie doesn't come firing into my discussion with the down ref with a whole bunch of emotion, telling me what I'm supposed to be thinking in that moment. And if there had been less emotion brought into that huddle, he probably would have known what the actual issue was, that it wasn't about crowd noise, or I would have complained about it for 2 hours the night before. I would have complained about it for an hour before that point and for 2 hours after that point, but for the 1 point in 9 sets that I complained about. And what was really interesting is that since that was the only point I complained about, they never did that again on a serve the rest of the night. So they obviously knew that that was the issue, and they obviously knew that that's probably not right. And then they didn't do it again. But then, you know, because it all got convoluted into this issue of crowd noise, we have their whole administration, athletic directors, and people working there running around trying to get the Big West Conference on the line about a rule definition. And it just turned into something that didn't need to turn into. I went and sat down on the bench and never had a discussion again because I knew what the rule was. You can have crowd noise, which is why when we resumed play like 15 minutes later, the crowd noise started again. Of course, it was even louder now, which was fine. I didn't say a word because I couldn't care less about the crowd noise. So it was just unfortunate. It didn't need to happen. It's not necessarily good, you know, for the game. It's not something you want to have necessarily happen, but I just feel like we have every right to have a discussion with the down ref about something like that. You know, imagine in baseball or in basketball, a guy's about to pitch and they just blast a whole bunch of artificial noise, especially when in COVID where there's no fans. I mean, it's you can definitely hear it. Or a guy at the free throw line is about to shoot and they just blast artificial noise. It just doesn't happen. And that's the issue to talk about, not the issue of artificial noise. That's just a good way to make me kind of the villain and kind of someone else the victim. And it's to me and to my staff and talk to my AD, it's unfortunate and also at the same time kind of amusing of how far it could go off track and take a 15-minute break in the arena and not, it's just ultimately not good. Because when the ref ultimately said, it came back saying, hey, we're good to go, it's like, well, of course we're good to go. And of course, Hawaii feel at that their administration and all that stuff felt like they had won this big battle on crowd noise. And it's like, well, I have no problem with your crowd noise. I never had a problem with it at the beginning of the game. So, and then you listen to the narrative after. And of course, I didn't get interviewed. There wasn't a quote in the newspaper. It just went straight to an emotional response after the match from Hawaii's side on their own platform. And then that's the only message that gets sent out. And you know, at the end of the day, believe me, I've gotten some really fun messages sent to me from the Hawaii fans because of the narrative that was sent out, totally inaccurate of their comments, telling me, you know, be used to what Stan Sheriff sounds like and how it's going to be really noisy there. And it's a great environment. And if the whole crowd's there, of course it's loud. It's great. You know, but, you know, I've coached in some arenas that make Stan Sheriff sound like, you know, a good, solid high school gym around the world. You know, it's not, I love the environment, and I love our guys loving that environment. There's that environment in a couple other arenas too. You got a BYU with a sold out crowd, or I'd like to think some of the sold out crowds we've had recently at the Pyramid. And that's part of the deal. No kid goes to bed at night, you know, dreaming of being a college volleyball player and to play in a gym the size of a high school and have nobody there. You know, they dream of playing in front of a sold out crowd in a big match with big stakes. And those are the matches you remember as an athlete. So I want that environment. I embrace that environment. And I never have ever spoke bad about any noise over there. So, you know, I'm no victim here. I could have probably not responded at all. I was a little shocked that I was having my first discussion in 20 years heated with a coach that he brought into the discussion. But unfortunately, he didn't like that. But he got a response kind of with the tone and sentiment that he brought into the huddle himself. And I think anyone's going to open their mouth and come in and pop off. Then I think in when everyone's heated up competing, you're probably pretty sure you're going to get a response from any of us that are coaches. Everyone's passionate about what they do. And so at the end of it, I'm done with it. I have no hard feelings with any of them over there. They're trying to do something special this year. And it looked like maybe we had a chance to upset the apple cart a little bit. And there was a lot of emotion riding on it. And I can respect that. And we can move on.
I want to get some feedback from the other coaches, being that, you know, this is a unique season. You know, the fact of the matter is, no fans. And we're trying to create as much of the most familiar environment that we had pre-COVID. So any thoughts for any of the coaches here?
I'm going to start piping in music. We weren't doing it at all. That'll be great. So I'm going to talk to my administration about that.
Yeah, I think the league did a good job doing it. They put out some regulations that necessarily not everyone's followed, but as far as you're supposed to keep it at like 70 decibels just in the background, then every once in a while, if you do something great, like your team hits a 3-point shot or big stuff, you can raise it for a second, raise it down. But I don't care what they did with it. You know, in reality, I thought it was great. It does break up some of the echoing and the how quiet it is in the gym. And to be honest with you, I think when there's TV involved, like in Hawaii, or we all have streaming, but really when you have multiple cameras in the venue and mic, that hot mics, I think it's smart by the conference too, because it can take away some of the words that maybe happen in competition on air that people don't want to hear and probably shouldn't hear. And I think it's good at drowning that out. So it's not just for the ambiance. I think it's smart by the conference to let the viewers watch a game and not listen to some of the stuff that maybe happens or they hear during a match.
Coaches don't curse. They're the most upstanding people.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about coaches. Come on. We're open.
Hey, how about you? Anyone else? Anything else to say on the crowd noise? Actually, not crowd noise issue, but just the timing of the crowd noise. Nope, all good. Well, that's actually good, because that was one of the questions that we solicited on our lightning round. So I'm going to go transition into our lightning round, and there's four going to use, may jump to five, we'll see how it goes in the interest of time. But first question, we're going to go, since sorry Al, you're the rookie on here, so I gotta go with you first. You know, the most natural response, these guys are way too seasoned, so they're too planned now. We want the live raw response. So first question is, your take on artificial crowd noise. I'm not going to say in Hawaii, just your take on artificial crowd noise. Yes or no?
Think it's great.
All right. Dan.
Yes.
Dave.
Yeah.
And Jay. Big thumbs up for all you guys who are listening to the podcast. Next question. Due to COVID-19, most teams are restricted to playing in-conference matches. If they could add 2 to 3 non-conference opponents to their schedule, who would they choose to play, Al?
Well, I think that we're supposed to be doing this a lightning rod. There's just so many. I like going to the Chicago trip. That's always really good for us. And I'm, you know, missing out of having our opportunity to play our regional non-conference. So playing Day, playing UCLA, that we do a lot. That's that you miss out those competitions big time.
Yep. Dan, how about you? 2 or 3 that you'd schedule non-conference?
Well, Pepperdine for sure. I want to play those guys. You know what I mean? I want to crack in Hawaii.
You're tied for 4th in the poll this week?
Well, something like that, yeah. I want to crack in Hawaii. That's what I want. So, I think we got a good group this year. And so I want a shot at those guys in terms of playing those guys. And I'd want a shot at BYU. You know, this is two teams that I'd want to play for sure, just in terms of that. And then Pepperdine. Of course.
Yep. All right, Dave, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'd go basically anybody that has a better record above us right now. So Lewis, Hawaii, those would be two of the top ones. And then I'm with Al. You miss out on the schools that are real close that we can't play, and we're all within 30 miles of each other. So those are the ones just logistically I scratch my head and think, man, I wish we could have figured this out, but I understand why.
All right. And Jay.
I got two answers. I want to schedule any team that has a coach that plays golf so that we can go in the morning prior to the match and go play around. Second of all, what I'm hoping moving forward, especially in the next 2 to 3 years, we talk about some conferences maybe breaking off. I'd like to see a Vegas tournament in the middle of the year with a number of teams going, getting a lot of cross-pollination that maybe couldn't happen at other times of the year. So I know Alan's put together some things like that in years past. I'd really like to see that happen, maybe around the spring break time or maybe in between some of those and other matches.
Yep.
And Jay also wants to play golf out there as well, you know, Shadow Ridge or those. Yeah. So
my boss is watching.
All right. Next question. Do you feel like 10 All-Americans with two reserved for a Libra on each team, too little or just right? Al.
Well, I probably, besides the obvious answer, if it's too many or too little, I don't like the idea in general of reserving any positions. Maybe I'm different on this. I don't understand. I've never understood why you hold a spot just for the libero. Because you may have three liberos that are really good, or you may have, you know, four great setters, and you're going to leave a setter off because you have to put a libero off. So I don't like the premise in general. I just don't think we artificially do it. And I think it started with good intention when we added the libero to make sure they didn't get left off. But I think coaches are smart enough to know you should probably add one, you know, the best one. So I don't know. I think that more's always better. You know, I watch the how it comes out at the end of the year and see there's four or five for the second team All-Americans that could easily have been first team. And I've been on that committee with Dan, and it's a struggle splitting hairs with guys. So I think it's a real easy answer. Always more.
Yep. How about you, Dan?
Yes, more, especially this year.
All right.
Dave. There's a lot of good players and a lot of good numbers and no cross-pollination, like Jay says. And it's just, it's going to be really tough. And yeah, I get to sit in that seat. So
that's right. You mentioned that last week.
Yeah, I'm looking for a lot of good help from the other coaches. But I think it's going to get pretty difficult. Yep. So,
Dave?
You know what? I'm just glad we have a good committee chair to take care of it all. So that's good.
But he's in front of you, so we'll see where the Pepperdine guys show up on there. How about you, Jay?
Increase the number. I mean, that's the best way to do it until it becomes unsaturated.
All right, our final question, and I've reworded it a little bit because of the way it's originally worded, may have stoked some fires, so I'm going to do it the most neutral way. Should coaches be allowed to coach university programs and the USA men's national teams or a national team of any kind? So we'll start with you, Al.
You know, yeah, I mean, ultimately, yes. You have to, I have to say yes on that. It's because I've seen how it's been historically that, and even when I was the national team head coach, the national team is a very, and USA Volleyball is a very small organization. It's built on all the coaches that we have in men's volleyball and for the most part, women's volleyball, but especially on the men's side, so many of them get involved. And I tried to have a ton involved when I was coaching and coach different teams and have different representation. I think it's good for our game. It's good for the national team. So yes, but I think, you know, where they're going with it is, you know, John's in a situation now that he's the first time ever national team coach is coaching, you know, one of the big universities in our sport. And he's also the national team head coach. So he's going to get viewed in a way on any decision he makes. That's going to be, is that for UCLA or is that for USA? And that's a decision that has to be made by the athletic department of his, you know, his institution and what USA Volleyball is willing to deal with long-term if there's a fallout from it, if there's no involvement of the coaches within, you know, men's volleyball, if it seems like it's a agenda driven, and I'm not saying it is, that's a decision they have to decide with. And then if the third part of that for me is you also have to pick the coach, you know, who can do the job. And that it's not an easy job. It's actually a very, very difficult job in this, especially in this country that with the pool being so small and there's just a lot of limitations to that job. And You know, there's no doubt John's very qualified to do that job. And when USA Volleyball is trying to choose the head coach, they're going to factor in all of these things I just said, but ultimately they're going to pick the guy they think is the best guy for the job. And when Doug Beal, before he left, was adamantly opposed to what's happening right now, but Doug also was the guy that hired John in this job. So I'm going to go with that was Doug's belief at the time, which was the best decision for USA Volleyball at the time. And he weighed in all those factors. And knowing Doug like I do, I would imagine it's with really good intent. And that was the best decision made at the time. So I know it's a long answer that doesn't get black and white, but it's a very difficult question. It's a very easy one from the outside to throw, you know, jabs one way or the other at.
Yeah. About you, Dan?
I agree that you should be allowed to do both, but Alan coming from firsthand experience speaks on all that. You know what I mean? So like, when Alan was a national team coach, he gave me lots of chances to be a part of lots of different things, which was pretty key and important. And John's done the same thing for me as well with the national team. And, you know, certainly being the head guy, if that was in a position where USA Volleyball had a ton of money and that head guy could be compensated the way he needed to be and they could solely focus on that and not give up a great university college job that they have to give up and be able to come back to, I think Alan was fortunate enough to be in a great situation with his bosses that he took a sabbatical and coached that team. I don't know what the deal was with UCLA and John, if he was going to be able to do that. But you got both super talented coaches and super talented programs, and how do they balance all that stuff? I think that's pretty difficult. And so there's a lot of different directions. And so to say one guy can't do this because of this, that's pretty tough. And good to hear what he said about, you know, ultimately high regard for Doug, and he's making that type of decision, then I would respect him making that decision. So,
yeah. And Dave.
Yeah, I would trust Al. He's been there. You know, if you're talented enough, that's the key word. If you're talented enough to do both, kudos to you. So there's not many people that could pull that off.
And then the controversial one, Jay, close it out.
I really don't think there's any controversy here. You know, I also was a benefit of working on the national teams below Alan when he was the head coach, and Dan and I got to work together on a number of junior national teams. And, you know, those by themselves are not easy positions. You know, it's a long time away from home in the summer. You're missing some recruiting opportunities. You're missing, you know, some camp opportunities, whatever the case is. I think the real question, to be honest with you, is what the university is willing to do. You know, Alan was in a unique situation where Long Beach said, hey, we're going to give you this time away from Long Beach. He luckily had Andy Reid that can kind of step in and handle the reins for a while. He had a capable staff underneath him that was able to handle the situation and kind of, you know, didn't really miss a beat. But if you're at a university where maybe they're making you choose one or the other and they're not saving the position for you, that could have been a whole nother story. I don't know that Alan takes the job at that time. He's got one of the best college jobs in the country. And if his school said, hey, it's either or, you can't have both and you can't come back, I'm not so sure he would have taken it. And I'll let Alan answer that one later. But I think, you know, Alan also made a really good point. And I know this is a lightning round, so I'll be quick. The college coaches on the men's side, we are the training coaches for the national team. And, you know, in years past, you know, in the 80s and 90s, there was always talk that it took a good 6-7 years for guys out of college to be able to produce at the national team level. And in the last 20 years or so, you've seen guys come out of college that are ready to go year two, maybe, and getting some opportunities in year one. And in some cases, they're playing while they're still in college. That's a testament to all the hard work that the college coaches are doing. We're all on relatively the same page philosophically, so we're training the same things. I give my hats off to all the coaches in the country that are able to be a part of that system in some form or fashion and help coaches like Alan and John be able to run that show without missing a beat too much.
Yeah. It's all good stuff.
Rob, one thing that I would add to that Jay said is that, first of all, on behalf of when I was coaching the national team, I'm sure I could speak with John on this, is that it's a huge thank you. There's no way we get anything done at US, with the national team level without the quality coaches that in the men's game that just give up their time for virtually no money. They get a small stipend to cover some costs that they end up losing money on the deal every time, every trip. So it's very much, and they're and thankful to their universities to freeing them up to go on these trips and do different things. But, you know, I think that when Jay talked about my situation at Long Beach, I think that and this was the same when Marv was coaching the team too. Marv was established at UCLA for a, I mean, I'm sorry, he would hate that. Established at Pepperdine for a very long time and had a wonderful relationship, obviously, with people at Pepperdine. And they trusted that it was good for Pepperdine and for Marv to step away or come back. And I was in that same situation. Obviously, I had played at Long Beach, an assistant coach for 5 years at Long Beach, had been the head coach for 9 years, and my athletic department did the same thing for me. And I think for John, it was a little bit different. You know, he had played at UCLA. He was in a, you know, he was switching from Irvine to UCLA when he did both. And I just think it's a big ask to, yeah, you know, I get my athletic director to give me the job, and now I'm going to ask to take 4 years off. I think that's a pretty big ask. Ultimately, though, as I got to admit, I think it's better if there's separation. I think there's definitely better if it's separated. So, how could we get to that point? Because one thing that is a little bit of an issue for me with it is, and this isn't a slam on who's coaching it now or the decision they're making, is that those positions within USA Volleyball have always been kind of fractional part-time positions for many, many years when everyone did it. And a lot of people put a lot of work into getting those things into full-time positions and getting the pay pretty good and getting assistant coach positions, year-round positions. And to see it go back to kind of a part-time is a little concerning to me, because then what happens when John is done, whatever that looks like, is this the new model we're going to, or are we going back to smaller salaries and maybe you can't get the right guy the next time? And these are some questions that they have to figure out, because in a perfect world, I'd like to see the job be taken, and for not even a perfect situation, but for me, like the 4 years, that's not a great thing. I was a 4 year. If I had stayed more than 4 years, I had to resign at Long Beach State. That was my deal with Long Beach State. USA Volleyball knew that coming in. I knew that. And I wasn't going to, there's no way I'm giving up my job, my head coaching job at Long Beach State to come back at 48 or whatever I would have been and be looking for a new head coaching job for the rest of my career. I just didn't want to do that. But ultimately you want at least a 2-quad head coach, I think is important. That's great for the program, if not more, but I think 2 is important. So you got to be willing to go out. You're asking for 8 years commitment. Then you got to go out and pay for that, get that guy to come in, pay him well enough that he will either give up his university job or at least take a leave from it. And then that's really, really clean, and it's really good for the sport. And it's really good for all the coaches to feel good about getting involved and helping out. And 100% of the attention that's given by all the coaches involved is going 100% only to the national team's success to get on the podium at the Olympic Games.
Yeah. Well, it's all good stuff this week, gentlemen. And I want to thank you for your time. That will conclude our Viral Volley podcast episode. Be sure to follow all their programs, again, as we said, in the volleyballmag.com segment. Thank you to Jay Hossack of George Mason, Dave Hunter Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, and Al Knipe of Long Beach State. Best of luck to you this week and the rest of the season. Hopefully we can get you back on, Al, at one point towards the end. I know the Big West guys are rotating, so we'll see what we got on the docket next week. Take care, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks, take care. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Viral Volley Podcast. Be sure to follow Rob at Rob on the Mic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or at robonthemic.com. Check you next time.